Tom Hall. This is Midday Culture Connections. Royal wedding fever has spread across the pond and here in the United States. Prince Harry, the youngest son of Prince Charles and Princess Diana, will wed American actress Meghan Markle in the spring. But along with wedding plans and elaborate fascinators, much of the conversation about this royal engagement has centered on race. Miss Markle is biracial. Her mother is black and her father is white. Dr. Sherry Parks of the University of Maryland joins me to talk about royalty, race, and identity. Plus, as more powerful white men in Hollywood and Washington face allegations of assault, 8 in 10 hotel workers report being molested. And while many accused men face career-ending consequences, are others given a pass? Midday Culture Connections starts right after the news. Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall, and today it's Midday Culture Connections. Royal wedding fever has broken out among Anglophiles across the pond and here in the States. Prince Harry, the youngest son of Prince Charles and Princess Diana, will wed American actress Meghan Markle in May. Now, predictably, a royal wedding has captured the world's attention, but unlike Prince William and Kate Middleton's engagement, much of the conversation about Prince Harry and Miss Markle has focused on race. Meghan Markle identifies as biracial. She was born to a black mother and a white father. So by comparison, Barack Obama, born to a white mother and a black father, is forever etched in history as America's first black president. Unlike Miss Markle, President Obama self-identifies as black. Today on the Midday Culture Connections with Dr. Sherry Parks, what happens at this intersection between royalty, race, and identity? What does it mean that Meghan Markle, soon to be a member of the British royal family, which for many around the world is the very embodiment of white imperialism, what's it mean that she is black? Plus, there's ever more to ponder about the continuing avalanche of sexual assault allegations against men on Capitol Hill, in Hollywood, and everywhere in between. How is race informing this front-of-mind conversation about power and privilege? The allegations against Harvey Weinstein, which started the most recent avalanche, were in the main leveled by white women, some of them very rich and famous themselves. It was mostly white women who brought down the likes of Charlie Rose, Matt Lauer, and other prominent media figures. But what about working-class women and minorities? 8 in 10 hotel hospitality workers say that they've been harassed on the job. 8 in 10. That's like basically everybody. R&B singer R. Kelly has settled several cases, and he's faced a trial for his sexual misconduct with teenage girls. But unlike other entertainment figures like Bill Cosby or Kevin Spacey, R. Kelly's career hasn't taken a hit. All of his victims were young black women. So what role does race play when addressing sexual assault? Dr. Sherry Parks joins me every month to help us connect to culture in various ways and help us frame these kinds of questions and perhaps even begin to answer them. Sherry is an associate professor in the Department of American Studies at the University of Maryland College Park. She's the author of Fierce Angels, Living with the Legacy from the Sacred Dark Feminine to the Strong Black Woman. Hey, Sherry, good to see you.
Hi there. Good to see you.
And joining us on the line from England is Sherry's daughter, Kelsey Parks Smith. Kelsey is a postgraduate student in the School of Sport, Exercise, and Health Sciences at Loughborough University in the UK, and she joins us from that university in the UK. Kelsey, how are you doing?
Doing well, thanks. How are you?
I'm great, thanks, and welcome to the show. It's great to have both of the Parks women with us here on Midday. If you would like to join our conversation, the phone number rather here at Midday, 410-662-8780, our email midday at wypr.org, and our Twitter handle at Midday Tom Hall. So Sherry, first of all, are you one of the people swept up with royal wedding fever here? Are you into this?
Well, I chuckled because in a way I'm a professional feminist and they may come take away my card because yes, I've been geeking out over this.
So why would this be anti-feminist to be geeking out over the royal wedding?
The whole princess mythology has some problems with it. I mean, and I've been teaching against this archetype for decades. You know, I argued that, you know, and Little Mermaid should have negotiated a better deal for her people before she married the prince who ate her people. So, you know, and so I am in a problematic space. But I have to admit that I really am taken in by the image of the prince kneeling before a woman of color to propose to her. I also am taken with the fact that it is not happily ever after, that the British press started in immediately, and then the royal family shut that down. No, you cannot do that.
Yeah.
They started in with a racist response, and then that was challenged. So I'm comfortable that it's not completely artificial here, but I am taken by that. I argued in Fierce Angels that African-American women were the only women on the planet fighting to be traditionally feminine because they've been saddled with this strong black woman image, which is good and bad. And middle-class black women have argued for since the 50s that they want to have a choice to be soft when they want to be.
They're allowed to be both.
Right.
You don't always have to be the anchor of the family.
Exactly.
You can also be a sexually alluring, beautiful person. Yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah. And Kelsey, you're at ground zero of royal wedding fever. I mean, what's it been like, you know, since this announcement has been made? What are your friends saying? What are folks, you know, at the university saying? How's it taken people?
Almost immediately, my phone started blowing up. I have a group chat with a bunch of my friends in my hall, and everyone is geeking out that way too. The buzz around campus, people are fairly excited. I mean, the topics of what the royal family is. And I mean, as an American in England, my friends have immediately just started explaining about the royal family and what it's all like and how big it is. And kind of trying to explain to me what the lineage is in that way. But people are definitely very excited to have another royal engagement.
And is the reaction to the engagement, have you heard the reaction sort of couched in racial terms? I mean, the fact that Miss Markle identifies as biracial rather than black, as some journalists are referring to her, others are not. But the black press tended to at least in the United States, call her black. The mainstream press, white press, whatever you want to call it, tends to call her biracial. I mean, how has that played into it in your circle?
I feel like most of the conversations I have been in about it, people try to dance around the topic almost. I don't know if that's because most of the people I'm talking to are white and they're talking to me as a black woman, but I made a comment when I first heard about it that a lot of American women would probably be angry because they thought they didn't have a chance, but Meghan Markle obviously did. And no one responded to that comment. I didn't explain in my message that I was talking about her being American rather than her being biracial. And I'm not sure if the silence was because there's kind of a racial undertone to this or a racial backstory. But for the most part, no one's actually mentioned it. It's just that there's an American princess rather than a biracial princess or biracial American princess.
And Sherry?
Well, first, people may be confused because Kelsey and I sound a lot alike. So this is Sherry.
That was Kelsey. This is Sherry.
Yeah, this is Sherry. You also noticed that race is played more subtly all the time, even in your classes, when you're talking about sports psychology, which you can't talk about in the States without talking about race, that when you brought up race, can you talk about the reaction that you got in the class when you talked about race? And we should say that sports psychology is the reason she's in England is that it's a longer, stronger discipline there than it is in the States.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what's the general conversation about race in England as a black American going to school in the UK?
Well, I'll talk to my experience in my class first. I am the only black person in my cohort, and we have all the same classes together, so we spend a lot of time together. And in my first class, we were talking about just things in general that could influence sports psychology, or factors that people don't necessarily think about or athletes don't necessarily think about. And people were talking about class and religion, and I brought up race, and the air kind of went still. And I felt like, oh, okay, I'm the only black person in the room and I brought up race. Like, this is just gonna change how the cohort feels on day one. But no one mentioned it, we just kind of moved on. The lecturer said, all right, well, yes, that does also count, but that he was talking about another factor. He was trying to get us to say another factor. And since then, it hasn't come up in lecture, honestly. We have talked about, excuse me, I'm in a lecture about clinical populations, and so we've talked about a bunch of different populations and how sports psychology relates to that. But class and religion come up often more than race does. In general, I am also the only Black person in my immediate group of friends. When we hang out as a large group, that we have a very diverse friend group, which is slightly refreshing. But in terms of race, it's often danced around, like in the conversation about Meghan Markle. When I walk around, I have noticed, and I noticed this when I was in England the first time, and then when I come back over, it's often a case that I get some side looks and often some sneers until I open my mouth. And so until I say, like, hi, how are you?
And they realize you're an American. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. They hear the American accent. That's when they kind of relax often. I don't know if that's a conscious decision, but I know it's a conscious decision in my head to talk a lot when I walk around campus or when I walk around. I'm constantly saying, hi, hi, how are you? How's it going? So that
present your Americanness. That's really interesting.
And because of that, and I'm really glad you said that, is that what would be the response? We won't know if it had been someone from a country with whom they had had a more recent colonial experience. I mean, Black Americans are treated very differently. That's been in my experience. It's been Kelsey's experience than people that they may assume are from Africa or the Caribbean. I'm not saying it's right, but it's true. And so part of the welcoming that she got may have been because she's American. Kelsey has already been elected hall chair. So she's the liaison. Proud mama moment, I'm sorry.
You're allowed.
She's the liaison for all of the graduate students on the campus with the warden or the provost. Would that have happened in the United States? We don't know. But race gets, if you're an American Black person, race gets blurred. And you can do things like be a princess, or she's probably going to be a duchess, but you can be royalty or at another level, hall president with, you know, a committee of Brits working under you without comment.
Yeah. And Kelsey, I love your formulation. You talk about bringing up race in your class and the air went kind of still. Was that your experience as a kid? I mean, when you were in middle school, high school, college, is it a vastly different experience, this so-called conversation about race here in the United States as opposed to the UK?
There's definitely a difference. I've, for all of my life, gone to predominantly white schools, and my university was predominantly white as well.
In university,
not so much. Mm-hmm. Yeah, at Smith, it was not as much of an issue or a difference because it's a very diverse campus and kind of everyone's welcome. Not to say that everyone's not welcome here. It's just a very different experience. But sometimes, actually, yes. So I ride horses, which is also a very predominantly white sport. And whenever it's brought up that I am the only one at the show who's Black or the only one of something, in some situation that's Black, there is somewhat of an air that changes. But I think I felt it more here because it was day one and I didn't really know these people in my cohort and everyone's trying to make a good first impression. So I definitely felt the air change in that situation, but it wasn't the first time and I'm sure it won't be the last.
Let's try to take one quick call before we take a break. Kinsey in Baltimore, welcome to Midday with Sherry Parks and Kelsey Parks-Smith.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Before I get to my comment, I want to say, Kelsey, when I came to the United States, I had the exact same experience you did. And when I opened my mouth to speak with a British accent, which I no longer have, much of the racism the Blacks around me were experiencing tended to evaporate or lessen around me. And if I had I could mention race and not get the same effect or experience that the African Americans around me got. But my initial question is, how white is Prince Harry? If Sophia Charlotte was descended of an Afro-Portuguese woman, which is his royal ancestor. And his mother has a Desi ancestor. He's already a mixed race person, not as recently mixed race as Miss Merkel is. But as you know, what is white? What is black in the modern world that we live in?
Yeah,
or even in the ancient world?
Yeah, that's a really great question. And obviously, Kinsey, you know your royal history. That's really great.
And Sophia was the wife of, correct me if I'm wrong, Charles III?
She was George, I believe.
Okay. So it is a great question. And so, of course, race is not a biological construct. It is conceptualization. We're mostly alike. There is some difference because of different life situations, but that research is mostly squelched. And so even if you look at her, quote, black mother, she's light-skinned. And many people who have been, if you're black, quote, I'm doing air quotes in the United States, and your family has been here for a couple of centuries, you're probably mixed. I mean, so there are... what is black, what is white? We know more about that, about on the black side, that people are mixed. But you're absolutely right that many, many people who perceive themselves as white have mixed blood.
Yeah,
and
that's
so,
interesting.
And so it's not, but we do have these dichotomies, particularly between black and white, although there are other races, and that's why we're dealing with this conception.
And Kelsey, just before we go to a break real quick, have you read anything in the British press that, you know, says, oh, by the way, Harry's mixed race as well? Is anybody taking that position? That's really fascinating.
No, actually, all of the press has been about Meghan. All of the press related to race has been about Meghan.
Right.
And often comparing her position as a soon-to-be duchess with the Duchess of Cambridge, and some very interesting comparisons between the behavior of both.
Yeah, interesting. All right, we're going to pick this up when we come back from a break. Dr. Sherry Parks of the University of Maryland is the author of Fierce Angels, Living with a Legacy from the Sacred Dark Feminine to the Strong Black Woman. One of those strong black women is her daughter, who is Kelsey Park-Smith. She joins us on the line from Loughborough University in the United Kingdom, where she is a graduate student. Our phone number, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @midday. Tom Hall, stay with us.
This is Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.
Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Glad you're with us. By the way, coming up tomorrow on our program, we're going to talk about the proposal from City Council President Jack Young. He's the council president here in Baltimore. He's proposing that the city allow an organization called the Associated Black Charities to sort of take control of the city's $12 million youth fund. They would administer it in the first year under President Young's proposal. We're also going to talk to Luke Broadwater of the Baltimore Sun and Mary Rose Madden of WYPR to talk about efforts to curb the growing homicide rate and crime rate here in Baltimore during Catherine Pugh's first year as mayor of Baltimore. Governor Larry Hogan giving a press conference at this hour, which Mary Rose Madden is covering. She'll give us a little debrief about what transpires at that event to talk about Governor Hogan's plans for violence reduction. We're also going to talk to a young man who works in an intervention program run by the Baltimore Health Systems Organization. This is a program called U-Turns. He's on the street in places like Sandtown, Winchester, and Harlan Park, trying to get kids to literally make a U-turn from a direction their life might be taking that is not so positive. So we're going to talk about crime reduction policies, strategies, and possible solutions to what is clearly a very intractable problem. That's tomorrow here on Midday. If you're just joining us today, it's Midday Culture Connections with Dr. Sherry Parks. Sherry is an associate professor in the Department of American Studies at the University of Maryland in College Park and the author of Fierce Angels, Living with a Legacy from the Sacred Dark Feminine to the Strong Black Woman. We're talking about the royal engagement between Prince Harry and Meghan Markle, among other topics. Joining us on the line from England is Kelsey Parks-Smith, who is the daughter of Dr. Sherry Parks. She's a postgraduate student at the School of Sport, Exercise, and Health Sciences at Loughborough University in the UK. Our phone number again, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org, and our Twitter handle, @midday. Tom Hall. So, Kelsey, when you were growing up as a little girl, this whole business of princesses and Disney and the whole notion of, you know, finding your prince, literally Prince Charming or Prince something or other. What do you remember of that? What do you know of that? Was that part of your experience as a kid?
My
I'm putting you on the spot here because your mother wants you to say no, it wasn't.
I'm laughing because it's mixed.
Yeah, right. The only princess experience I had growing up was the Rodgers and Hammerstein Cinderella, which is for those who don't know, is the multicultural rendition of Cinderella. So Cinderella is black, I believe. Prince Charming is Latino, and his mom is Asian, I believe. It's been a while. That was
Goldberg
my only princess. Yes, Whoopi Goldberg is also the fairy godmother. That was my childhood princess encounter. I was obsessed with Brandy as Cinderella, not necessarily Cinderella, but Brandy. Otherwise, no, my friends today still are angry with me when I don't want to watch Snow White, or like they have a movie night and I don't know the plot of a princess movie. It definitely was not a main part of my
upbringing. I remember she was raised by a woman who teaches media and gender, and she was helping me move my office, and she said, "Wait a minute, we own these tapes." She didn't realize that because I kept them at work where I and my classes tore them apart.
You showed them to your class, but you wouldn't show them to your daughter.
Because remember, all of those princesses were white, and I wanted her to see herself as a beautiful black girl. But because she did fall in love with Brandy Cinderella, there were no Brandy Cinderella costumes. And so we shipped off a photograph to Grandma, and who made a gown.
Oh, wow.
And so she had to go around, you know, "I'm Cinderella." "No, you're not." "Yes, I am." And do that. And so I think there was another moment that I would love for her to talk about when she was a senior in high school, and she was going to the prom. Do you remember that Lord and Taylor story?
Mm-hmm. I do. So I was trying to find a dress for a senior prom.
She went to Park.
And actually, I went to the Park School of Baltimore. And I was trying to find a dress for senior prom. And my friend had a dress that didn't quite fit her body type. So she wanted I bought it off of her, but it was still just a bit big. So I was going back to the store to get a different size. And I tried the dress on, and they have the little podium in front of the three panel mirror. And so I stood on the step up rather. And there was a little, she had to be about five, a little black girl and her mom who were there, shopping around. And the dress, is quite, lavish, I bet. I guess there's pearls on the bodice, and there's a gold kind of ribbon belt, and then it's glitter everywhere else. Like, it's just, it's not like...
It's strapless.
I don't, yeah, and it's strapless. So it looks like...
Sounds pretty princessy to me.
Yeah. It looks like a very lavish wedding dress almost. And this little girl looked at me, and she said something to the effect of, "Wow, you look like a princess." And I rarely wear dresses other than if I'm dressing up for an occasion. So I'm already feeling kind of odd in this dress, and it was just a very sweet moment. And her mom thanked me for talking to her child, and we had this little conversation. It was very, very cute.
And the kid was white or black?
It was a little black, black.
And that was what was important. I think it would have been kind of a negligible moment for a person who was not black. But the little girl, and I remember this, she said, "You are a princess."
Yeah.
And the mother came over, and she was beaming, and she stayed there and stared at Kelsey for over 5 minutes, maybe 10. And Kelsey knew her role and stood there and, you know, looked beautiful. And, and her mom, as Kelsey said, thanked her, because for little black girls, you don't get to see the image.
Right.
And we know that moment was important.
Yeah. Whitney Houston was the fairy godmother in that movie. And Whoopi Goldberg was the queen. That comes to us courtesy of Bridget Armstrong, our producer. I don't want to give anybody the impression that I knew that.
Why not, Tom?
Well, you know, our daughter was Shield shielded from, and she's a little older than you, Kelsey, 5 or 6 years older than you maybe, but she was shielded from television in general for a while. I remember we visited some friends in New York for Thanksgiving. She was about 4 years old and the television was on, and she came running into me in the next room. She says, "Daddy, they have Barbies on TV. And Uh-oh. You can buy them." It was a revelation to her. Now, the first princess movie that included a black princess via Disney didn't come out until 2009.
She was the ninth one. They went through everybody else until they, and she's a frog for most of the film.
Yeah, Princess Tiana, yeah. Right? So 2009, were you in college then, Kelsey? Did Princess Tiana make any impression on you as a young woman?
In 2009, I was, depending on which part of the year, I was either in ninth or eighth grade. No, not so much. I was just out of the princess phase of normal or regular people. People who grew up with princesses. They're in their age range of when they are outgrowing princesses. I was kind of at that age range too. And then I also didn't have princesses in my life. So Princess Tiana didn't make a huge spot in my life, but I was very cognizant of there's finally a black princess in a Disney movie, which was a definite turning point. And since then, we've had we've had other princesses of other races that have come in, and it's definitely. Princess Tiana was definitely kind of a groundbreaking moment in Disney films.
But Sherry, when you talk about it, I got the vibe that you're a little dismissive of Princess Tiana. Oh, she was a frog for most of the movie. I mean, is it an important cultural moment?
It's an important cultural moment, but was it the equivalent? No. Mm-hmm. And by then,
not the equivalent of these other princesses, and all these people.
It came at a moment when Disney was starting to lump all the princesses together, so there would be a princess collection. So she was part of an ensemble, even though she had her own movie. She was a frog for most of it, and then she became an ensemble. Kelsey grew up mostly she didn't do Barbie unless it was gifted to her. She would say, "My mom won't buy me a Barbie, but she'll let me keep it if you buy me one." And so people bought her.
Well, there's a ploy. Now, are there black Barbies? I recall
there were. Yeah, but Barbie has other, that's a whole nother show.
Right.
Yeah, what's wrong with Barbie?
Because, you know, Meghan Markle, I mean, a year ago, when I guess they were first starting to date, or they hadn't been dating all that long, Prince Harry took, you know, what was at that time a pretty unusual step of reprimanding the press coverage of Meghan Markle. Mm-hmm. The royal family issued a statement that says, you know, a line has been crossed. Meghan Markle has been subject to a wave of abuse and harassment. Some of it's been very public, smear on the front page of a national newspaper, racial undertones of comment pieces, and the outright sexism and racism of social media trolls and web article comments. So, I mean, Kelsey, what's this? It seems now that Meghan Markle has been transformed into, you know, this great figure of adulation because she's the next duchess or princess, whatever she's going to be. How did that transformation happen? Because it sounds like the royal family was none too pleased with the way that she was treated in a racial way.
Well, the rhetoric around Meghan Markle has changed, yes, quite dramatically, because she is now engaged to Prince Harry. But there are still some racial undertones in the press now about it. So there's one article I'm looking at from a website that actually is talking about how Meghan Markle will have to change her etiquette to be a royal. And almost every point, I mentioned this at the end of the last segment, almost every point compares her to the Duchess of Cambridge. So she's at
that's Princess Diana, right?
Yeah. Kate Middleton.
Oh, Kate Middleton. Excuse me. Okay. So that's her going to be her sister-in-law. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. So she's at a sporting event and she's crossing her legs knee over knee, which is apparently not something that a royal can do. She's also wearing ripped jeans, and which is also something that I believe they say she will have to throw away, or she will be in trouble with the royals. And so there's a very interesting rhetoric still in the press in terms of what I hear day to day. Yes, people are very excited and rarely bring up race.
And all of that overshadows, I mean, the fact that she's an American, the fact that she's 3 years older than her boyfriend, her fiance, the fact that she's an actress, she's a Catholic. We read this week that she's going to renounce her American citizenship, become a British citizen. Is she going to, you know, join the Anglican Church? I mean, she's also divorced. I mean, you know, Sherry, how does all that play in?
Well, and some of that they took care of maybe in anticipation of this engagement. But evidently a year or so ago, the royal family made some edicts, because they can do that, that some of these things were okay. And I don't know if it was anticipation because they've been dating for a while or not. I have to say that one of the comments that I love in American social media is that he is out of his league, that she's so much prettier than he is, that were he not a prince, she would never date him. And I have to say, I kind of love that. I mean, because it's an inversion of the usual statement. And it reminds me of something my mother said, because, you know, Black people talk about race all the time. And my mother said, you know, don't ever date a white boy unless he's the bank president's son. Like, make no concessions for his race. And so I think this is the same thing. It's like, don't marry him unless he's a prince. Make no concessions for race, because race does not raise his specter. And so there are lots of echoes here that this touches it.
In February of 2016, they did a study of Black, white, biracial children, and they found that boys were much more likely to identify as Black, mm-hmm. and girls who were had biracial parents were much more inclined to self-identify as biracial. That's interesting to me.
Well, and I mean, you mentioned that at the beginning of the show, and of course, that's what Barack Obama did. I mean, when he first hit the national stage, is he Black? Is he Black enough? And I, and evidently a lot of people, waited to see what he would say about himself. And he said that he came to the United States as a mixed race person. He moved to Chicago and he immediately got hit with racism because he was seen as Black. And he said, well, if I'm going to have the negative part, I'm going to have the warm and friendly part of it too. And he actually did what his historians call positive genetics, where he married back. And so that his children are clearly Black. There was a student at the University of Maryland, Grievous Vasquez, who now plays professional basketball, and he did his senior thesis with me on the Latinization of international athletes, people who come from South and Central America who come to the United States. And what he found was that if they looked white, they became Latino, which wasn't his identity when he came here. He was Venezuelan white. But if you were dark enough, you became Black. You had to become Black. The players felt that they had no choice. And so they decided to embrace it. Being a basketball athlete, being Black, is not a bad thing. Mm-hmm. But that, I think the trope of Black masculinity is so strong. People try to count to figure out what you are so they know how to treat you, maybe how to fear you, that they get pulled into that in ways that women don't.
By the way, evidently I misspoke. Meghan Markle was not raised Catholic, but she did attend a Catholic school. So, Kelsey, we're finishing up here, and you've been really great to spend some time with us today. But, I mean, as a young Black woman, a Black American woman, how does it strike you that Ms. Markle chooses to call herself and identify as biracial as opposed to Black? Does it matter to you one way or the other?
It doesn't matter to me one way or the other, but it's interesting hearing that and hearing what we would call Black Twitter, or what Black people are saying on social media, because a lot of the talk when the announcement happened was very excited about a Black princess. Or it was saying, I didn't even know she was Black. She is not Black. She passes too easily, etc. So I don't know if her decision to call herself biracial is trying to combat that, or kind of not to put herself in the middle. But I don't know if it necessarily matters to me. Mm-hmm. I'm excited that there is a person of color that is going to be joining the royal family.
Can you speculate whether or not you'd be just as excited if the person that Harry was going to marry was white, had two white parents? I mean, does it up your interest because she's biracial? Or would you be a royal wedding geek anyway?
Not as much as I am now. I'm definitely mm-hmm. more excited to have a person of color that's joining the royal family. I shared a post on Facebook the title was "We Got Ourselves a Black Princess, Y'all," which I did note that they called her black instead of biracial, but
interesting.
There's definitely more interest in that.
Kelsey Park Smith, she is a postgraduate student in the School of Sport, Exercise, and Health Sciences at Loughborough University in the United Kingdom. She has joined us on the line from that university. Kelsey Park Smith, thank you so much. Really appreciate it. It's been great talking to you.
It's been great having been here. Thank you so much.
We're going to take a little break. When we come back, we will come back with Kelsey's mom, Dr. Sherry Parks, who is on the University of Maryland College Park faculty. You can join our conversation, 410-662-8780, our email midday@wypr.org, our Twitter handle @MiddayTomHall. Stay with us. Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Today, Midday Culture Connections with our good friend, Dr. Sherry Parks. She's an associate professor in the Department of American Studies at the University of Maryland College Park. We're going to shift our focus now away from the royal princesses and the royal wedding and the royal engagement to, what is commonly called sexual misconduct. I love the rhetoric around that. You assault somebody and you have committed a misconduct. Join our conversation by calling 410-662-8780, our email midday@wypr.org, our Twitter handle @MiddayTomHall. So Sherry Parks, the news came in just an hour or so ago that Representative John Conyers, 88 years old, the longest serving member in the U.S. House of Representatives, has decided to retire. He's not using the resign word to describe what he's doing. At one point, he was talking about not seeking re-election. Now he's talking about, in an interview he gave to a Detroit radio station earlier this morning, he's going to resign. We've got pressure on Al Franken, the senator who's now been accused by, I think, a total of 5 women of making taking inappropriate physical action with them. We've got this guy, Blake Fahrenholt, who's a Republican congressman from Texas, saying that he will repay the taxpayers the $84,000 that was spent from this congressional slush fund to settle a complaint by his former communications director. Are people in Congress being treated differently when it comes to this general tsunami of sexual misconduct allegations?
Well, I mean, I think we see that they were treated differently. I mean, other people don't have a slush fund of taxpayers' money to pay people off. I mean, it's interesting because everybody is trying to get rid of these people as fast as possible. We hear that they've been investigated, but basically corporate media is just trying to, with the Matt Lauer, just to get them away because this has become such a taint. It's interesting because when it was people in the movies, it was one thing, and that was really important. But now we really are in the halls of power. And if there's going to be a tipping point for this to be a lasting impact, maybe this would be it. But it's really interesting because the backlash has already started. The Hollywood Reporter has reported that actresses are asking for more conservative gowns. So the idea that grown men somehow cannot control themselves, and that is the responsibility of women to cover themselves in order to protect themselves from these animalistic men, I think is disrespectful of the many men who manage to control themselves. And goes.
So this is like, you know, gowns that they would wear at award shows and stuff
yes,
like that?
Yes, yes. Yeah. The stylists are reporting that people are coming in asking to be more covered up, which is taking the blame, taking the fault. When we have fought for a long time to say, no, the responsibility is for people to control their urges in public, which is, I think, and I think there are lots.
That's like judges, you know, famously saying, well, if she weren't
exactly.
wearing that mini skirt, you know, she wouldn't have been raped, you know.
Right. And there have been women who have said, well, it's common sense that you have to, you know, protect yourself from men. What does that say about grown up men? I mean,
well, nothing that's been said about grown-up men has been very good in the last, you know, few months now. I mean, this is really an incredible moment. But it is interesting how the people in Congress do appear to be treated vastly differently than, you know, the Matt Lauers, the Garrison Keillors, the Charlie Roses. I mean, the minute this comes out, they are excised. I mean, Garrison Keillor, the words Prairie Home Companion are not to ever be uttered again. They are throwing away the T-shirts. They are throwing away the mugs. They are throwing away the boxes of powder milk biscuits.
How do you feel about that? Somebody who's in radio, how do you feel about that?
Well, I mean, whether I'm in radio or not, I mean, it's interesting to me that some people are caused to have their careers completely demolished immediately. Mm-hmm. Kevin Spacey, Matt Lauer, these types. And others like this guy R. Kelly, the R&B singer. He's 50 years old. He's one of the most popular singers in culture today. He's got a 25-year history of victimizing not only women but young women. You've got Roy Moore, whose history, again, is with teenagers when he's in his 30s. And there's a very good chance that a week from today he will be elected to the United States Senate and will join this august body, you know, in a week in a special election. There are lawsuits that have been filed against R. Kelly. There are many settlements that have been reported. And they, of course, all come with non-compete or non-disclosure agreements, right, which is the same technique that Bill Riley used, and Bill O'Reilly and Roger Ailes. They pay these enormous amounts of money and they tell people to be quiet and go away. So it speaks terribly to men and to men's assumption that power, prestige, and money can translate into any darn thing they want when it comes to a woman's body. It's outrageous.
Well, or anything. I mean, the woman's body is just another thing that you get. Remember the caller we had last month when he said it kind of came with the job. And so I think there are several things in what you said. I want to pull out the R. Kelly piece because I still turn away when R. Kelly music comes on. I mean, my little symbolic act is not to listen to him. And there were black women who have tried to organize boycotts of R. Kelly. The two things that are going on there. One, there's a long history of the abuse of black women not being valued as much as the abuse of white women. I'm credited, I don't know if I did or not, with coining the phrase missing white woman syndrome to draw attention to the fact that missing black women were getting almost no media attention and missing white women get enormous media attention. And so I think who the victim is matters. I think that if this had all been women of color, this might not have had the same thing. And then there's the aesthetic experience is such that people are willing to override awful behavior in order to enjoy. And it seems to be stronger with music, but it's also there with film. Certainly was there with Bill Cosby for a while. You know, the rumors about Russell Simmons have been there for a long time. You know, keep your daughter away from him. I actually was told that. We were looking for a patron for Kelsey's writing, and someone introduced the idea of Russell Simmons, and somebody said, yeah, but you go, don't send your daughter. And so people have known and looked the other way. I think the protecting the big black man is really important. I mean, you mentioned to me an article about Spelman and Morehouse that black women definitely are pushed hard. And I write about this, too, in Fierce Angels, to protect the reputations of black men at the expense of their own bodies and sexuality.
The Spelman Morehouse story is a really interesting one. Well, all of these are really interesting.
And I'm sorry you didn't have a chance to introduce that.
Yeah, but it was on the front page of the New York Times Sunday. And the the close relationship between Spelman students and Morehouse students goes way back.
Yes.
I mean, the famous graduates, you know, including Dr. King himself and others. I mean, now we've got graffiti on the chapel at Spelman. We've got flyers being posted on the campus of Spelman naming the names of the Morehouse students, the men. In the Morehouse is the men's college. Spelman's the women's college. It's
right.
in Atlanta. Naming the women, or naming the men, rather, from Morehouse who have sexually assaulted them at various parties and gatherings and stuff. But this bond between Spelman and Morehouse, if you talk to graduates, you know, people talk about the Spellhouse weddings and Spellhouse children and stuff like this. I mean,
it's extremely strong.
It's a huge step for a young woman at Spelman College to say, here's a Morehouse guy, and he did this to me.
And they are not saying misconduct. They're using the word rape. I mean, they're coming out and saying it. And this really attacks the, I think, rightfully so, the image of the Morehouse man, which is, you know, the stand-up guy who is beyond reproach and they're supposed to carry themselves. And, you know, the sexual abuse of women on college campuses is a big thing. And it wasn't at Morehouse, but I remember going to a party at HBCU in North Carolina, and a football player walked up and grabbed my hand, and he wouldn't let it go. It's not the as bad a story, but he said, you're going to be with me. And I remember spending a half an hour trying to pull my hand away.
Extricate yourself.
And people just thought it was okay. And finally he realized that I was going to make this hard for him, and he let go. But that idea of as a Black woman, your role is to protect, go along with Black men, and to protect their reputation in public at all costs. There's actually a homicide episode that gets at this.
So how does R. Kelly get away with it? He's still touring. He's still making records. He's all over the place. He's on The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon last year and singing Christmas carols and getting a big hug from Mr. Fallon. How does he get away with it? And Kevin Spacey, you know, this allegation comes out, and then boom, he's off the show. He's cut out of a movie.
I'm saying because R. Kelly was victimizing young Black girls.
Yeah, so that is really the only distinction, isn't it, in all of these
things? That I can see.
Yeah. The global opinions editor for the Washington Post, Karen Ataya is her name. She makes an observation that I thought was really interesting, that Lupita Nyong'o, who wrote that very interesting piece in the New York Times, a very long, detailed piece about the abuse that she suffered at the hands of Harvey Weinstein, that when Weinstein reacted to this whole scandal, it was Lupita Nyong'o who he sort of singled out.
Mm-hmm.
He talked about her specifically. The others, he said, you know, if I've harmed anybody, I'm truly sorry and I need help. But he went after her, and she's basically the only person of color that is mixed up in this. That's
because it's more acceptable to go after her. I mean, one, she's expected to be able to protect herself. I mean, she's not the vulnerable white woman trope, and she's not as valued as much.
This also sort of shook me to the core when I read that 8 out of 10 hotel workers, that's virtually everybody, has been assaulted by guests in these hotels.
And they are less vulnerable than domestic workers in private homes, where the figures, the estimates are higher.
And you can't get much higher. I mean, you know, a
there's
couple
more
people
room,
and you're
right?
at 10 out of 10.
Right.
You know, we remember Dominique Strauss-Kahn and the settlement that he did. That was 2012 with the African maid, Nafissatou Diallo.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's a non-disclosure thing. No one even knows how much money it was. But in Chicago, they now are providing the hotel housekeeping staff with panic buttons to be able to press a button if they're being assaulted by a guest. That's amazing.
Well, and I think, you know, we have a puritanical background. I mean, there's a long period where Americans have not dealt squarely with sex. And so our public sphere covers over this underbelly, where powerful people have had regular access to the bodies of less powerful people with impunity.
And we will talk about that next time you're here, right after the first of the year. Good to see you, Sherry. Thank you so much. Dr. Sherry Parks, Associate Professor in the Department of American Studies at the University of Maryland College Park. She joins us every month for Culture Connections here on Midday. Coming up tomorrow, we're going to check in with City Council President Jack Young's Chief of Staff, Lester Davis. He'll give us an update on President Young's proposal to have the Associated Black Charities administer the $12 million youth fund to various programs throughout the city. Plus, we're going to talk about Mayor Catherine Pugh's first year in office. Her anniversary is next week. Luke Broadwater of the Baltimore Sun will be here. We're going to hear about Governor Larry Hogan's plan to reduce violence in Baltimore from WIPR reporter Mary Rose Madden. We want to thank Joe Squared for providing lunch today. Joe Squared serves coal-fired pizzas, risotto, and local craft beers. Locations and hours at joesquared.com. Hope you'll join us tomorrow. Thanks for listening today. I'm Tom Hall. Have a great day.